Hi, today is June 3rd, 2018. This is Mobile News Podcast 257. And I guess despite my own personal preferences, we're going to talk about WWDC, which starts tomorrow on June 4th. But let's start off with something else. Let's start off with something googly. So some of you might, in our fives of listeners, might recall that a while back when Google forced me to switch to the new Google Calendar UI, I went there kicking and screaming. I kept switching it back to Classic as long as they allowed me to, and I think finally they don't. But in any case, I still don't like it. I still prefer the old Google Calendar because I could do things in fewer taps or clicks.
Mm-hmm.
And some things don't work right at all, like using a 24-hour time to designate periods. But in any case, recently I had the option to switch to the new Gmail user interface. And I said, and with the option to go back, so I said, I'll give it a try. And you know, it's still too much white space, I think. But and at least the standard version. I didn't look at compact or anything because that was too little white space. But I actually kind of like it. I like how you can see which messages have attachments really quickly. John, are you an inbox user or using regular Gmail?
I use just regular Gmail.
Okay.
And I've been fairly happy with the UI, although I haven't played with any of the new changes. I've been stuck on Classic.
Yeah, and I have no problems with using Classic for the rest of my life. But on the assumption that eventually Google's going to force me to change anyway, I thought, I'll give it a try, see what it looks like. And it's not bad. I think I'm going to keep using it in the new redesign mode. And hopefully, I can't remember how many times they've redesigned Gmail now. I mean, they added tabs and hopefully they don't change it too many more times before I die. But
they will. And, you know, that's just the way these things go for whatever reason. They just love changing them up.
All right. Well, when you have a chance to take a look at it, do so. And let me know what you think. I think it's okay-ish. And I do have that one thing I really do like, which is it's much easier to see what attachments attach to which messages now, including type, which is neat. All right. I'm going to go to sleep. I'm going to turn off my mic while John talks about what's happening at WWDC 2018 because you know, this year is rumored to be it's rumored to be a stabilization year. Not so much in new features, just tightening up things, making sure all the bolts are on there correctly, not going to fall off. And I'm okay with that.
And I feel like this is the fourth or so straight year that that's what we've heard. You know, before we started podcasting, I said that every WWDC has had less excitement that I've been looking forward to than the previous, which I think is kind of unfortunate.
Yeah.
I remember 4 or 5 years ago, if I was working at all, I was taking days off work to sit home and watch the keynote. And tomorrow I'm looking at my schedule going, maybe I can catch some of the keynote, but I'm not going to move stuff around too much to see it. You know, lunch with friends is probably more important than the keynote to me this year. But one of the things that I did notice was that there are a few things that if they do come to the developer space and then the consumer space afterward, I think I'd be very interested in. So the first is something I've been asking for. If we go back in the records of Mobile Views podcast to when we first started talking about the Apple Watch, which was before it was released. The thing that I miss the most about my Pebble, when I used to use the Pebble Watch, was that you could get faces, you know, third-party faces in many different types and styles and just a number of different things. That's what I want again, and I've been wanting it every year since 2014. This year, there is at least a rumor because of some code in WatchOS 4.3.1 that says, quote, this is where the third-party face bundle generation would occur. And so that, of course, leads people to go, well, what is the third-party face bundle generation? And some are saying, well, that could just mean the third parties that Apple has worked with thus far, Nike, Hermes, those sorts of things.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It might not be third-party as in any developer on the planet. But what I'm hopeful for is that it will be any developer on the planet and that I can write a few watch faces myself that I might and play around with. So we'll see. That's kind of the big hope that I have this year.
Can I say something about that, John?
Yes.
You know, not to be mean, but you're starting to sound like how I talk about the old Spot watch when you talk about the Pebble.
Well, the only thing that the Pebble, you know, I would not go back to the Pebble. Obviously, I can't because Pebble doesn't even exist anymore.
Yeah, same
but,
with the Spot.
the only thing that I liked about the Pebble was that the ecosystem was so open, and the apps were good apps. Problem was the notifications were a little bit iffy. Sometimes they showed up, sometimes they didn't, and it was a black and white screen. So I do like my Apple Watch screen. I'm actually looking forward to quite a bit using the LTE on my Apple Watch when I go to the beach in a few weeks, because I'm going to leave my iPhone at home and basically just go to the beach wearing my Apple Watch. And if someone really needs to get a hold of me, they can. I can listen to music through my AirPods using it. But I don't think we have everything yet. And that third-party watch face, you know, I'm a Jimmy Buffett fan. I want a watch face that just says 5 o'clock, you know, or whatever it might be. And so that's what I'm kind of looking forward to. I don't know if I'll get it. I think the odds are about 50-50, but that's been the odds every year. So
you know what you could do to make the watch a little bit more useful is it would show 5 o'clock, but it would show what time zone the 5 o'clock time is correct in.
That's true.
You know, so it'd always say 5 or 5:15, but it would shift time zones for you. So,
but you see, that would be what I would, I could write that watch face if I had access to watch faces. A watch face that simply said the current time, then underneath, it's 5 o'clock in blank.
Right.
So that when, you know, it's 5 o'clock somewhere, I know where somewhere is.
Right. And I have to say, well, that, go ahead.
Well, no, I was just going to say that's the big ask I have this year, Apple.
I would actually be just as happy. You know, and I, like I said in the past, as a former Android Wear user, I've actually bought a couple of, you know, 99 cent, $2 watch faces and chronograph type things for that one, and I really enjoyed it. But what I would really be just perfectly happy with is if Apple would allow me more freedom in how I, which complications I can use, and how I can place them on just a picture, you know, just whatever picture I choose to use. I don't even need a dynamic image underneath. Just, you know, my favorite photo, and then I can place, you know, complications exactly where I want them, so it's not on, you know, like a snout or a paw or, you know, whatever. Or it isn't a snout or a paw, you know, if that's what it would be. But at any rate.
Yeah, you want to put them where you would like them.
Yeah.
Versus where Apple would like them.
Yeah. Okay, again, I'm still not interested, so continue on with WWDC.
Okay, a couple other things that I would like. One is the rumors that we're going to get a system-wide dark menu or dark mode option. I was always very skeptical about dark mode. I never thought it was all that useful, and then I start playing with it, and I do see how it can be nice and low-level lighting to have it. Plus, it looks cooler. You know, if I'm going to look like I'm hacking into the Matrix, I need dark mode. So that's one thing I think would be cool if that was rolled out to automatically all apps and Mac OS.
Mm.
And then rumors are just all over the place about cross-platform apps. The idea that you could have one platform or one code base that would run on both iOS and Mac OS. And I kind of like that idea. In fact, I would even be okay with, you know, obviously I'd be very okay if it was pay once, use everywhere. But I'd even be okay if developers wanted to monetize it to, you know, you buy, for example, Tweetbot iOS, and then for an extra $4.99, you unlock the desktop version.
So it's
something like that.
Kind of like the Amazon Whisper Sync, where you can buy an Audible audiobook, and for a sometimes a fractional price, you can also buy the ebook or vice versa for the Kindle. Yeah, I can see that. I'd be okay with that. Although, yeah. I really, it's funny, you know, maybe because I was burned, as probably you were, by the whole Microsoft Windows CE, you know, this is a handheld device, it's a companion to your desktop, and it's got the same software and all that, and which is never true, right? I mean, just ask Frank McPherson, who wrote a couple of really great books during that time frame for the handheld PC and pocket PC, when you're trying to say, Microsoft Access and a handheld PC? No, it's not even close to Microsoft Access of any kind. So it's basically like a little query language. But at any rate, I just have, I'm kind of happy that iOS is different from the desktop, you know, in terms of different apps. Although it is nice to have like the same apps sometimes, like, I don't know, Twitter or something.
Mm-hmm.
But, I don't know. I just don't see it as important as I once did. I once thought it was super important. In fact, I was really mad at Microsoft because the handheld PC apps are so much weaker. They're basically toys compared to the desktop app, even though they kept saying, you know, this is Windows on your, upon the palm of your hand and all that kind of good stuff. And even, you know, even when Steve Jobs introduced iOS you know, before it was called iOS. When he introduced the iPhone, he said, "This is OS X in the palm of your hand." Remember that?
Yeah.
And it's not.
Yes, it's true. It's not, because we still have Mac OS. So if it truly was, then we wouldn't have that. That is one of the things that I think is interesting about this whole debate. No matter which ecosystem we're talking about, Sometimes we want these things to be just the same way, but we never quite get there, it seems.
Right. And, you know, even when you think you've got something like it, it's not really as good as you thought. And the recent example I use is, you know, last year I bought a Samsung Chromebook Plus, a Google Chromebook, which I really like. I mean, I use it every single day, 7 days a week at home. It's my main PC, if you will, now. And one of the reasons I bought it is because it was the first Chromebook to ship natively, you know, out of the box, with the Android app compatibility mode turned on. Everybody else, if you had a compatible Chromebook, had to install the beta version of Chrome OS and, you know, turn it on and all this kind of stuff. But this came out of the box, and I thought, yes, finally, you know, because I couldn't just see buying a PC with just Chrome on it. But the thing I learned is, you know what? A PC with just Chrome on it is pretty good. And I rarely use any of the Android apps that are available for it. And I should also say, some of the Android apps simply don't work right. Evernote for Android has never worked correctly in whatever you want to call it, emulation mode, or, you know, however they're doing it, some kind of container system. Even Google's own, and I mentioned this in the past, Google's own, I forget what it called, video app, whatever their video app is for playing their TVs and movies, or Google Play. It used to work kind of okay, although it never worked in full screen correctly. And when the full screen did start to work, it could no longer download movies, which was kind of nice when you had a flaky, you know, internet connection. You just wanted to download it and watch it without stuttering. But at any rate, so I've been pretty happy with just Chrome OS. And now that the Linux app compatibility mode for Chrome OS is in, I think, early beta or something, I find it interesting, kind of just as a technology geek, but I wonder if I'll even ever use it. And I should note, by the way, that this Linux compatibility mode will not support X Windows, so it's non-graphical. It's, you know, command line only kind of stuff, which is fine, you know, for if you want to run Emacs or VI or whatever, I don't, you know, or run your favorite programming language. Like, I think the one thing I might use it for is to run Python, you know, to just write some fast scripts to test ideas. But anyway, okay, so that's my two cents.
Well, it sounds like you and I are both... I am slightly more enthused about WWDC than you are. But I guess we'll just know more this time tomorrow. This time tomorrow, the keynote will be wrapping up, and we'll have those wonderful roundup articles that different websites like to do.
Right. Can I make a prediction?
Is your prediction that there will not be a refresh of the Mac Mini?
Yes, that's what I was going to say.
I think we both would like a refresh of the Mac Mini, but I think you're probably right. I don't think we're going to get one.
Yeah. You know, I don't want to say I'm bitter, but I'm kind of bitter.
You've had a lot of, you accuse me of being like you with Pebble and the Spotwatch.
Yeah.
But we've had a lot more Todd is bitter things than John. I mean, we've had Civilization. Right. We've had Mini.
I still have a 2 Mac iPad Pros. One is running iOS 10, just so I don't have to. Not I don't have to, but just so I can still run Civilization Revolution. 1, which is good. 2 is not good.
Viva la resistance.
Yeah. Okay, next up is something that people got all excited about and turned out it was just a oops kind of thing. So once you started off, since you found the first link.
Well, you know, this might be an oops sort of thing, but not really. the thing that came out this week that people were going, I guess they were just putting it right out there. The tablets on Android's official website disappeared.
Yep.
And people are going, they had tablets. Yeah, I remember those. They weren't that great.
Yeah.
I will note that Android tablets, to me, never seemed to really take off, and I think most people felt that way. Although, I do have an 8-year-old Samsung Galaxy Tab, the first Android tablet ever released. That's been a really, really reliable picture frame for me in my living room. it's been my picture frame now for about 7 years, and it just runs, never gets an update. I don't really hook it up to Wi-Fi that often. It has just the apps on it that I installed 6 years ago. But I think that's, unfortunately, what people have realized, is that Android tablets, great picture frames, not great tablets.
Yeah, and quite frankly, you know, I am 0 for 2 in terms of reliability. I have the Samsung Galaxy Tab 8, which is it predated the iPad Mini. In fact, I bought it because the iPad Mini did not exist yet and would not exist for another 6 months until after its release. But at any rate, it no longer works. It hasn't booted in years. I also, right after that, I bought the Nexus 7, which I think you have one too, maybe.
I had one and I sold it.
Okay, so
it was a second picture frame, but it wasn't as reliable as the Galaxy Tab.
So. Yeah, so my Nexus 7 still boots, but because the app updates for it are so large, I really can't. Now, I'm not talking about the OS, not Android underlying it. That hasn't been able to update in years. But I can't even update the apps in it because it just doesn't have enough memory. And you know, I ran into that with the Nexus 1 phone, too, and the Nexus 4, for that matter. That's one of the problems with Android is early on, I think now it's probably okay, early on there just wasn't enough system RAM and not enough storage, solid-state storage, to do much after it became maybe 2 or 3 years old. Whereas the iPhones and iPads, unless you bought a really underpowered one, you know, like a, 8 GB iPhone or something, then you know you're pretty good.
So we thought this was the death knell for Android tablets, but one of Google's senior vice presidents, Hiroshi Lockheimer, which is a great name, says that it's a bug during a site update. I don't know how you create a bug that takes out an entire lineup of devices.
Well, it's a bug when your summer intern deletes the page and you got to recover it from backup.
Your summer intern who goes, Android tablets? That must have been something we were thinking of launching and never launched.
Yeah, that's not a thing, right?
Yeah, that's not a real thing.
I wonder if that's the case. Poor kid. I feel bad for the kid, you know.
There's a lot of summer left. He can maybe redeem himself.
And, you know, I think Google does say that, mistakes are allowed. It's not learning from them that's not allowed. So let's hope this poor kid is allowed to learn.
That's how all of the products from Google that we've loved have gotten killed off. Just been an intern that just thought, nobody uses Google Wave. I should just give
rid of it. Yeah. Well, then that was a good idea, though. Were you using Google Wave?
Sometimes they become full-time employees after their internship, and sometimes they're, let go. The one who killed off Wave, became a full-time employee. The one who killed off Google Reader,
might be Hiroshi Lockheimer. But Google does tend to deprecate and then disappear way too many really good products, products with lots of. All right, and let's see, you've got an app of the week. We haven't done that in a while. We should do that more often.
We haven't. So yesterday I was watching videos on Apple Watch apps that people thought were interesting. And this one is not purely an Apple Watch app. It's actually an iOS app. It's called Unwind Me. Unwind, one word, and then Me is the second word. And the idea is it's a game that you fire up when you are stressed out, can't sleep, worked up, and it actually gets slower as you play. The idea is that it helps you relax by these very gentle, very easy puzzle games. So one of them, you have a rolling ball that uses the accelerometer, and you kind of have to slowly roll it toward the hole, because if you go too fast, it'll go past the hole and it won't go down. So you have to kind of relax and just take it slow to get that. Another one is a series of blocks that you can touch on and they disappear. And, you know, if you group them together, bigger chunks disappear and the rest of the blocks fall down. And it's a simple, simple thing. There are no instructions with it. You just start playing it. And the cool thing about the Apple Watch integration is it'll actually keep an eye on your heart rate and can actually slow the games down more if it looks like you're still kind of worked up. So I thought that was an interesting idea for a game. We think of games as getting people pumped up, getting people in the mood for excitement, and this is exactly the opposite. We want to relax people so that they can get on with their lives and not be stressed out from work. So I downloaded it to play with it. I'm not a very high stress person. I tend to be type B, but I just wanted to check it out.
Yeah, I should know that I see it as 99 cents.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not very expensive. Another thing, I'm looking at the screenshots from it. It's interesting. It's kind of a red on black background,
mm-hmm.
Kind of like for nighttime use, kind of like a submarine yep. in alert mode. So.
And you can change that background. Okay. So I'm showing Todd right now. There are yeah. different colors
oh,
that
I
you
see.
Can choose.
But I can see how the red on black mode would be kind of like, okay, so, you know, the screen is dark. It's not blaring out at you, kind of like the dark system dark mode you're talking about earlier from Mac OS.
Mm-hmm.
And the red is, you know, again, not a blurring white letters and geometric shapes. So that's interesting. There should be
There's
more games
also,
like this.
It can play white noise or rain sounds in the background. So kind of a neat idea, I think.
Yeah, what we need now is, you know how the Apple Watch heart monitor can alert you to if you have a sudden increase in heart rate when the watch thinks you're idle, you know, you're not moving around much. You know, maybe it can not only alert you, but put you into one of these relaxing games so you can calm down.
Play this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Play this for 3 minutes and, you know, call your doctor or whatever. Speaking of which, the Apple Heart Study, speaking of watches and stuff, I am now at 1,114 heart rhythm data contributions, and I still don't know what a heart rhythm is, but that's so.
1,014 you're at?
1,114.
Oh, I'm at 940.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, I think you started slightly after me.
Yeah, they didn't want me as quickly as they wanted you.
Yeah. Okay, let's see, what do we have here? One thing I thought you might find this interesting, John. I wanted your opinion on this. So I saw in GeekWire that investors, which include Vulcan Capital, which is Paul Allen, co-founder of Microsoft, Lux Capital, Google's GV Venture Arm, Peter Thiel's Founders Fund, and Amazon's Alexa Fund, that's quite a group of investors, have all invested in this control, CTRL, called Control Labs. CTRL, mm-hmm. and what they claim to do is they have a wristband that can pick up signals from the brain and allow users to control a digital device without moving a finger. You know, years ago, almost a decade ago, I tried some of those headband versions
mm-hmm.
that, you know, said that you could use, you know, whatever kind of, not EKG, ECG, I guess, signals that are near the surface of your head, and you know, for those of thick skulls, there aren't much there, so and also you need to have a lot of hair, it was a problem. But this is interesting, although, you know, picking up signals from the brain and the arm is interesting. I wonder if it's really more just muscle twitches and actual brain signals.
Yeah, that's what I'm actually wondering about it, if it's not really brain so much as it's small muscle movements that
yeah.
don't result in your hand moving, but your brain, you know, is thinking, move your hand or move
right.
your fingers. So,
or kind of like
I'll
those. Oh, go ahead.
I'll be interested to see if this takes off, because I could see it being a very useful tool if
yeah.
you had a display that you needed to manipulate, you wanted it to be farther away from you. Right now, this is kind of the problem with touch screens. In, you know, we just replaced a bunch of computers at work with Dell touch screens
yeah.
that. They're nice touchscreens, but you have to reach pretty far forward across your desk to use them because they're set up as desktop computers.
Right.
So something that would be bringing the interface to you where you could just sit there with your hand kind of at your side and be thinking about things and seeing the mouse move or the device, you know, interacting, that would be kind of neat.
Yeah, that's what you're describing with the arms is what Steve Jobs called the gorilla arms.
Mm-hmm.
problem, right? Which is why he said he didn't want Macs to have touch screens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they don't.
And, you know, having used several devices now with a touch screen, including Chromebooks and Surface Pro and a bunch of other stuff, Dells, I really don't use the touch screen much on a notebook. I mean, every now and then, mostly to get the Windows control panel up because it's easier to use the touch screen than to go to the, you know, keyboard or anything. But, yeah, I really don't see much use for it.
Ironically, I have a slight annoyance with them on laptops because I will have a student bring in their laptop to me to show me some work or, you know, ask me how to interpret something, and I'll go to point at it with my finger, and if I touch too close, sometimes it, you know, right clicks or it closes the window or random things like that. So I have to remind myself, oh, that could be a touchscreen. I should, you know, keep my finger back a little farther when I'm pointing at that number or something like that.
Yeah. Well, two things I wanted to point out before we let go of this topic is thing number one is I've seen a couple of different articles about it, and they're calling it mind control. But to me, mind control is somebody's controlling a mind. In this case, it is a mind controlling something. So it's a mind controller, not a, I don't know.
They are controlling your mind, Todd. Yeah. They're calling it mind control.
The other thing that would be interesting is, you know, for people who have neural damage of some kind, you know, I know I'm not talking about like at the neck level. We have no neural connectivity to the rest of the body, but, you know, you have some kind of neuromuscular disease. I wonder if this would work, you know. And if it's truly neural, it might work, but if it's really just a small muscle movement kind of thing, I would guess that because you know, people who lack or have mobility problems would still have the same issues. But it'll be interesting to see how this comes out, and I'm expecting you to buy it and tell me how it works. You or Sven.
Yeah, it'll be one of us.
Yeah. But I find it interesting, and, you know, hopefully for people with range of motion problems, it could be quite useful. And, you know, as we get older, all of us have some range of motion issues, so.
Unfortunately, you are correct.
Yeah. So I'm kind of just looking at my phone to see if there's any, if I have an app pick, and apparently I don't.
There have been no apps that you have found sufficient to pick lately.
Well, I did install the Google's Just Align. That's the name of the app, Just Align, which is available for Android and iOS, which lets you draw a line in 3D space, you know, as in a video. So you record a video, actually you record the line in 3D space and, you know, by drawing your finger on the screen. And then you record a video, and you can move around this line, which looks like a toothpaste with anti-gravity capabilities, floating in space. I'm not quite sure what... I mean, if I could actually draw accurately with it, like, you know, draw letters and numbers or geometric shapes, but I have tried, and it is hard. So, you know, that would be kind of cool if I could, say, you know, draw an arrow pointing to something, and then record a video and say, hey, I'm going to move closer to this thing and, you know, take a look at it. That would be kind of interesting, but I can't really do that. But it's free, so go ahead and try it. Okay, that's about all I have, I think. I guess tomorrow morning we'll find out if WWDC is more interesting than I expect, and I expect it to be totally uninteresting this year. since John and I are, 5 hours apart in time zone, while he is at lunch, I will actually be making my way to my office while I think the keynote starts. Keynote starts usually about 10 a.m. Pacific time.
Yep, 10 a.m. Pacific.
It'll be 7 a.m., so I should be still in my car trying to get to the office. And I guess by the time I get to the office, I should see the first of one or two major announcements. Do you expect any hardware to be announced? I don't. You know, not just a Mac Mini, but...
I don't really know. People think there's going to be hardware announced more this year than in past, it seems. But honestly, there's no real hardware I need right now.
Mm. Me too.
That, of course, that wouldn't stop me necessarily if I really wanted something. But it's one of those things where I'm curious to see if anything's hinted at. Go ahead.
I would buy an iPad Mini Pro.
Yeah, I would buy that in a heartbeat.
Yeah. Anyway.
That's not coming out.
No.
But... there is rumors that the next version of the Apple Watch might have a larger screen. And since Apple was very slow to release the first Apple Watch, remember we had the first look at it at the iPhone release in the fall, and then it didn't come out until the spring.
Right.
It wouldn't surprise me if there's a hint of, hey, later this year, Apple Watch 4 is going to be out, and it'll look something like this. So... we'll have to see if that happens. But otherwise, I don't really... there's no real hardware other than an iPad Mini Pro. I'd pick that up in a second.
And a Mac Mini refresh. But has the... you know, I haven't really... you know, I only started using Apple Watch with Series 3, which came out last year, if I remember correctly. Has the Apple Watch been refreshed annually since its release?
Typically, it's on about an 18-month cycle.
18 months.
Yeah. It's not usually I would be surprised if a Series 4 was announced tomorrow. Wouldn't be surprised if a Series 4 was hinted at for fall announcement, although honestly what I think we're going to see is during the fall when iPhones are announced, Series 4 hinted at then, and then maybe a spring release of Series 4.
Yeah. That said, I will say something I noticed, you know, so a couple of things I noticed actually. I was at Costco, Center of Technology, yesterday, and one thing I noticed is, going back to one of our earlier topics, a whole bunch of Android tablets on sale, like bargain bin prices, you know, under $200 for a pretty decent Samsung Galaxy Tab, for example. The other thing I noticed were Apple Watch Series 3 were available at a, I think it was a reasonable discount at Costco, so I kind of wonder now if, you know, they're unloading stuff at Costco.
Well, refurbished Series 3 are now in the wild. Apple has, in recent weeks, I did notice that, where
I don't think
Series 3 refurbs.
Yeah. I don't think Costco sells refurbs, to my knowledge. Or at least they would tell you if they were, I think.
But with that, it also could mean that the supply chain is open enough that they can lower the price a little bit. So. Yeah.
Anyway, okay, so we'll find out in 24 hours or so what's going on, and then we'll talk endlessly about it. Oh, actually, you're traveling next week.
No, I'll be here next week.
Are you here next week? Okay.
The week after, I'll be traveling.
Okay. So we'll regroup next week and find out what's going on. We should see if one of our other Mac aficionados, or not Mac, but Apple aficionado fans, or maybe even one of our Apple friends, not anti-Apple friends, can come on board. All right. Okay, so this is MobiViews Podcast 257. What is that? Hex 102? No, Hex 101, right?
Yeah.
X 101. Binary 11 plus 11111. No, 10. 10 plus 11111111. Whatever.
I don't know. I announced that we could think of our numbers in all these ways, and then you went off and recorded a podcast without me.
Yeah.
To have the big one, so I'm done with.
We'll do it in octal next time. How's that?
Okay.
Yeah, because we haven't done octal yet. Because I can't calculate octal in my head. But I used to, but not anymore. All right. We will sign off. Whatever the heck podcast this is, 257 Decimal Talk. Till you later.